Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Bick Nazar in the Mobile Kintec studio. Well, one of us is in the Mobile Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A lot to get into here on this Monday as we still try to come down from what was one of the most epic collapses I've seen in the final 5 minutes of a hockey game. Maybe not ever, but it's pretty close, Bick.
In your lifetime, right? Like, no, genuinely, like, I think Ian mentioned this on the postgame show. It's only happened like 3 times in NHL history where you give up a 4-1 lead in the final 5 minutes. Like, it was bizarre to watch. And it was such a spectacle that, like, I know there was like a lot of anger, but there was also a lot of laughter from the inbox as well, from people texting into the show of like, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, it was reminiscent of that Leafs Bruins game 7, 4-1 loss, or 4-1 for the Leafs in the third period, and they blew it, losing overtime. You know, the stakes were a little bit higher in that one, but, you know, that's an epic loss, and as it was Saturday for the Canucks against the Seattle Kraken. So they now head out on the road for a couple of games, one in Calgary, that's tomorrow night on New Year's Eve, and then they'll head out to Seattle for another matchup with the Kraken down at Climate Pledge Arena before coming back home for a game against Nashville on Friday. That is the week for your Vancouver Canucks. Let's get to it. It's the Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Four! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open on Canucks Central. It's where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Canucks did practice today. We'll get into some of that. The rumor mill keeps churning as things are never dull around the Vancouver Canucks. And I do want to continue on the conversation of Saturday night's epic collapse, Bick, because I think it ties into the rest of the conversation around the team and where they go over the next little while. It seems as though Pettersson is day-to-day, Hughes still week-to-week. There was an update from Darren Dreger that it could be 3 weeks or less for Quinn Hughes, but the less time, the better. But on that collapse Saturday night, I mean, I guess my takeaway is, after rewatching it again today and shaking my head at all of the mistakes on all of the goals that led to Seattle tying it at 4-4, and then, of course, the overtime winner, like, do you chalk it up as 5 minutes of chaos that partially was unlucky, hopefully you learn from, or was there signs of a bigger problem here for the Vancouver Canucks?
A little bit of everything, right? Again, when it's so unique, you kind of have to buy into every version of the story here. Because I'd love to sit here and say, hey, for 55 minutes, they did the job and you can rely on that. But when it's backdoored with that 5 minutes, I don't know how you suggest like something better is going to materialize over these next, you know, 5 games, 7 games, however much you want to say it, because it's such a unique, rare thing to see a team blow it in that manner that, like, any professional team should be able to hold that lead. So, yeah, like, I thought I would, after 2 days and 48 hours, be a little bit, you know, emotionally self-removed from that situation on Saturday, but I don't wake up today with any sort of like, oh, okay, like it's a new day, on to the next one. You need, you know, a handful of games to look at that and be able to review it differently. But as I sit here today, incredibly worrisome.
I may not be able to see the steam coming out of your ears sitting across the country, but I can still feel it. I could hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I've got way more room in the Kintec studio today. I'm doing lunges right now. But yeah, no, you know, like, Reach, it's like, well, we're going to talk about big picture things and all these things, but, you know, I don't want to make too big deal of like 5 minutes, but It as you mentioned, like, it does bleed into every part of the conversation, because even if you wanted to be in a scenario where you you know, wanted to be talking about, like, oh, go be aggressive. How can you be aggressive when you don't have, you know, stability on what this team is game to game? And more importantly, like, period to period.
It's it was wild to see how the snowball just built so quickly on the team, because for 55 minutes, they were so in control. I mean, given the team was out Hughes and Pettersson, they've been out Hronek, so you're missing your top pair, and now you're missing one of your top two centermen, a guy that just seemed like he was really starting to find his game a little bit more, had those two goals against the Sharks, and then he goes out before the end of that game. Unfortunate, but you can't ask for a team to play a much better game than what they did through the first 55 minutes. Was it boring? Sure, it was boring. It wasn't the prettiest hockey, but you're not going to be able to play pretty hockey when you're missing that much talent out of your lineup. And they really limited Seattle through the 55 minutes. I thought, sure, there was a chance here and there. They did some decent things, but You can only do so much when you're missing that much talent in your lineup. And I thought the Canucks executed very well for those 55 minutes. And then in the last 5 minutes, like, everybody lost complete composure. They needed Will Ferrell in Old School to be like, you got to keep your composure. Nobody was able to keep their composure. There was pucks, like, going into, you know, the guts of the ice for absolutely no reason. Like, I know, you know, Susie's got to be a little bit harder on that puck, but, you know, Juleson shouldn't be throwing it there in the first place. In that moment, like, just a calamity of errors everywhere around the ice. And I'm not sure that's something that I was worried about coming into the season with this team, but I am now, because we've seen a few more of these situations pop up. Like, the blown leads have been a bit of a storyline through this first half of the season. And now you're going into a stretch. We don't know how long Pettersson and Hughes are going to be out for, but you're not going to have your composure players in there to settle things down. So you are going to have to figure out how to get through these moments without those guys, because you still need to gather as many points as humanly possible as you sit on the bubble of the Western Conference playoff picture.
Yeah, as you mentioned, without the pivotal players, right? And Quinn Hughes not being here, I wish it wasn't, like, so visually obvious after that Seattle game of, like, wow, what can happen, and the bottom can just completely fall out.
Yep.
But, like, you know, we can only talk about reality, and reality was, even with the 4-1 lead, that, you know, that group couldn't be entrusted to close that out. And by the way, like, it's against Seattle, right?
Yeah, we're not exactly a high-powered team right there.
Yeah, and again, it's not as if they were, like, heavy forechecking and forced mistakes. Like, these were unforced errors to close out a game to get 2 points. And you're going to be playing Washington, Carolina, Toronto. Now, look, that's 10, 12 days away here through some of those games. So if week to week for Quinn Hughes means 7 days and he's back in a week, then okay, we can sing a different tune. But right now, the reality is, for these next 2 games, which are important games, Calgary and Seattle, you're not going to have Quinn Hughes. How is this group going to respond? And I'd love to sit here and say, okay, like, this is the opportunity. Like, now the team has had this wake-up call. It's not just a 3-goal lead like they did versus Calgary at the beginning of the year. And even that one, that's game one. You can forgive that, because there's 81 more steps to reclaim your status. This is now coming into game 36, right? We got 35 games of evidence. They haven't put themselves in this cushy playoff spot. It's kind of touch and go right now. Calgary's at your heels. Seattle, you know, 8 points back, but obviously they just pick up a win against you. You play them coming up here. Utah, St. Louis, they're all kind of sitting right there. This is a different environment than what we talked about in game one. So you got to respond. And again, it's to paint a pretty picture to say, use this as an opportunity. And that's the positive spin on it. Don't get me wrong. It's just, what level of faith should we have from the outside? And it's honestly, like, deteriorating fast.
Well, so if they close out that game Saturday night, my level of confidence in them being able to collect a few points here over the next little while without Hughes, probably a few ticks higher. But given how poorly it went, you know, I can't sit here and say that my confidence level is very high, that this team is going to be able to play at a, you know, 500, 550 point percentage to stay at the very least within striking distance, you know, over these next couple of weeks. Now, again, maybe I'm being a little bit hyperbolic here, because Hughes, week to week, we'll see how much and how many games it actually ends up being. But the thing about this is, like, we have enough data through the first half of this season and going back to last year, what this team looks like without Quinn Hughes on the ice. And it's not pretty, right? Like, we know how much different their possession numbers are, how much they control the shot share with Hughes on the ice versus how little they control the shot share without Quinn Hughes on the ice. You could play Eric Brandstrom a little bit more. It worked Saturday against the Seattle Kraken. His minutes, you had some positive differentials there. He looked okay in a bigger role, ended up playing the most minutes 5-on-5 of any Canucks defenseman, I believe. So there was a good sign there, but is he going to be able to do that against Washington, who's on fire, and Carolina and Toronto, and that rough road trip that is going to start next week? I have serious doubts about that. So my confidence level right now without Quinn Hughes is very low. Like, as long as one of Miller or Pettersson is in the lineup, I think we've been able to see this team be able to manage for a short period of time. But without Hughes, like, there's just genuinely, there's no replacement. And you add the absence of Filip Hronek on top of that. You really are just treading water right now. And treading water is I don't want to say the best you can hope for, but it feels like that's the best you can hope for. And give yourself, or give your front office, a reason to be looking at adding once you get out of this stretch and you get closer to the trade deadline. Because I'm not sitting here and saying, well, you should go and spend the assets right now to bring in a defenseman as soon as you possibly can to try and get through this period. I don't want a Band-Aid, Bick. I've always wanted that's going to be more meaningful to this roster than just a Band-Aid to get you through this injury crisis right now.
I'm just curious, like we chatted about this on Saturday, like how much it changes the picture of what you want to accelerate the conversations. Because look, we know they're active in the market, right? Like they're going to make additions pending like their playoff spot. They're going to want to make additions. And I'm just curious, like, how much this accelerates it for you, or if it does at all. Like, do you sit here and say, let's see if they can work it out? And I guess that's why I mentioned that stretch of like the teams that they're going to be playing here. And if it's going to be without Hughes, as much as it's too reactionary to say, you can't trust these guys going to Calgary or Seattle. Not that they're going to make a trade here today or tomorrow, but does it change the picture? Like, do you want something done before the Four Nations face off? Do you want something done before Carolina? That was the date I looked at and said they'll probably make a trade by the time they get to the Hurricanes game on that road trip on January 10th. That's probably like still my date, but that's still 10 days away. We're still talking about, six games from then? That's a lot of points.
So Darren Dreger reported that 3 weeks or less could be the Hughes timeline here. Rick Tocchet mentioned it is a upper body injury. I believe it's something to do with a hand, though I probably shouldn't be throwing that out there as I haven't got full confirmation on it, but I'm pretty confident in it. I don't believe it's like the most, it's not too serious, but it's something that's going to keep him out of the lineup, and something like you have this hard balance where it's like, well, our only hope is getting Hughes back and healthy and doing all of the things that he can do for us when we make the playoff push. But you're at a stage where, like, if things get really ugly over 3 weeks without Quinn Hughes, like, could you be in a position where, you know, now your playoff odds are less than 50% when you come out of this stretch? I think that's where my concern would be about not wanting to pull the trigger on a trade in the near term to shore things up, because the schedule does get hard enough where, like, could you lose 5 or 6 in a row without Hughes in the lineup? It feels realistic to me given the schedule on tap for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Rocket and Langley is texting in, 650, 650. I'm saying it now on December 30th. I'll retext when they come home from the trip, but they're not going to pick up any wins at all. 0-5, so that's a level of faith right now in the inbox. And as far as, like, again, playoff percentages and all that, like, I still think they're going to the playoffs, right? Calgary's not good enough to me. They'll fade out. Utah, we'll see if they have a surge in the back half of the season. While I had some hope preseason, I don't know how much the injuries kind of sunk their season and if they pick it back up, even though they've lost two in a row. Seattle's too far gone. St. Louis, I don't think, has any juice. So, again, it's not so much about, you know, playoff percentage to me. It's, are you going to be effective come playoff time? And now, like, it just shows, like, you're one injury away from the bottom dropping out. And to me, like, defense is always about defining your baseline, and offense is about dictating your ceiling. And now, like, we don't know what the floor looks like all of a sudden. Or I guess we do know what it looks like, that even with 4-1 lead, this could happen. And if they're going to go to the playoffs, like, it and go have success in the playoffs, because it's no longer about just, like, making it there. It's about having success in the playoffs. And that, to me, it should raise alarm bells of how to actually go knock off an Edmonton, go knock off a Vegas that you have to go through them.
I do wonder, like, if you're the front office, are you using this period as a litmus test for how good the roster is that you have beyond your top players and deciding whether or not it's good enough to continue making a push? Or have you already decided that this team is good enough, is strong enough, and you want to add no matter what? It's just a matter of getting healthy and then adding that piece to this group, because you're still confident in what you saw last year. You're confident in the coach. You're confident in the style that this can work in the playoffs once you get closer to full health.
Yeah,
that's the question I would have.
That's the conflict, right? And we chatted about this on Saturday. Like, that's going to be the difficult internal conflict that I imagine they're going to have. Now, I'd still subscribe to the idea that this team can be good, but, like, I'm running short on evidence here as far as the 35 games this season. It is based on a bit of a projection of what happened last year. But, you know, if you're going to go make additions, you know, to your point, it's about getting someone that's not a rental, right? It's about getting someone that's going to be here for some time that you can utilize, both the fact that if your pro scouting department is doing its job, you got a long-term answer here too.
Let's get to the Canucks Central roundup here. Frank Cervalli is going to join us coming up after 3:30. We'll get his take on what the Canucks will do here without their top guys in the lineup right now. And, well, JT Miller's name is back in the rumor mill, that according to Darren Dreger. Just that Miller's name came up in conversations around the league as he was trying to get a feel for things and what's going on. And I don't think that this is, I don't think this is necessarily anything new, given that Miller has constantly been in and out of the rumor mill, it seems, Bick, where maybe last year was the only year, as good as he was, his name stayed out of the rumor mill for all of last season. But generally, it's been in and out of the rumor mill for the last couple of years. And now we see his name popping up there again. And I guess for me, I'm still feeling like there's nothing to see here, because I'm not sure there's a way Canucks can roster a better team without JT Miller on it. For this year, at least. Maybe you reevaluate in the summer, but I don't feel there's a way that you can do that in season.
There's that last little bit, right? For now, at least, essentially, right? And it does feel like the smoke is really starting to fill up constantly, because it's one thing to be the guy that's kind of in the rumor mill and, you know, not be up to a certain standard, but it feels like it's happening often now, that we're going on, what, 10 weeks here that his name is basically in the rumor mill after previously from seasons ago being in the rumor mill. I'm curious just, like, what the timeline is on this. I'm with you. Like, this season to me just doesn't seem believable, but the fact that it consistently comes up and it's, you know, the manner in which everything has gone this season, I'm curious, like, in the summer, how much more this intensifies.
You know, there's, I guess, possibilities of looking at like a clean swap. You think about Mika Zibanejad, something like that. But I'm not the biggest fan of that deal. I'd rather have JT Miller than Mika Zibanejad right now. So it's a very difficult spot, and I think that's a reason why I don't think this is something that will happen, but obviously with all the smoke around Miller's name and, of course, the discussion around him and Pettersson and that relationship, is one of them going to have to go eventually? I think this story is not done for now. Canucks in Calgary tomorrow. How big of a 2 points is this tomorrow, Bick? Because the Flames can claim the Canucks wild card spot with a win tomorrow night over the Canucks.
Yeah, huge, man. We shouldn't be making this big of a deal of a December 31st game, but they've put themselves in the spot for it to be a huge game. Calgary's sitting here, an extra game played, and 1 point back.
Yeah,
you lose this. And again, like, this might be a tough stretch here all of a sudden, given he was out for another week and Pettersson not making this trip. So if you were to project, like, the next five games that they weren't here, not that anyone wants them to go 2-3, but if your two wins are Calgary and Seattle, that is a better reality than losing these two and picking up against Nashville and Montreal, because now Calgary has leapfrogged you in that spot. If you put some distance here, you can just buy yourself some time here against Calgary.
Given the absences, these next four games against Calgary, Seattle, Nashville, Montreal feel big considering what's coming afterwards. And if Quinn Hughes is out for a few weeks, you know, you could be missing him through that stretch of Washington, Carolina, Toronto, Winnipeg, Los Angeles, Edmonton. That's going to be a very difficult stretch for this team. You're going to need your goaltending to be on point. You're going to need to score on your power play opportunities, those kinds of things, because generally you're probably not carrying the play against any of those squads. So these next four games, these next 8 points that the Canucks have available to them against Calgary, Seattle, Nashville, Montreal, I think they are huge in terms of them, you know, being able to manage a decent enough point percentage over this next 3 week stretch, because the wins are going to be harder to come by the more time goes on without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. All right, we're going to get to Frank Saravalli coming up here in just a few moments. His take on what the Canucks are going to be able to do as, well, the rumor mill never stops in Vancouver. And of course, the injury to Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson causing even more question marks for this team right now. Frank Saravalli coming up next on Canuck Central.